Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. There is a brand new motion picture that is releasing in theaters today and everywhere. You can rent movies on March 28th from Greenwich Entertainment. It's called Aum. It's A-U-M. Aum, The Cult at the End of the World. This is a film by Ben Braun and Chiaki Yanagimoto. Chiaki, let's start with you. First of all, am I saying Aum right? And what was the impetus behind this project?
Sure. Hi, thanks for having us. It's actually called Aum.
Aum.
Okay. Yeah, this group really came into spotlight for their terrorist attack, which was a subway attack, subway gas attack in Tokyo in 1995. And I was born and raised in Japan, in Yamanashi, the countryside. And, you know, I was in middle school when it happened. I was too young to understand what actually happened or who these people were. But the group's largest headquarters was in Yamanashi, where I grew up. So, you know, I remember all my all the parents telling kids, you know, be careful for these people in white robes roaming in the mountains. So that was a very vivid memory in my childhood. And as an adult, you know, as I started making documentaries, producing documentaries, when I looked back about this group, I realized how little I knew about what actually happened or who these people were or why it happened. So when Ben and I sat down to talk about this story of Aum, I thought it was a story worthwhile exploring.
Very interesting. And Ben, welcome to the show. I remember that attack, and that was the first time I've heard of sarin gas. And I know that like a dozen people or so died. What can you tell us about the nerve gas, sarin?
Well, it's, I think what makes Aum so terrifying, because sarin is one of the most difficult nerve agents to procure and produce. There are a number of governments apparently in the Middle East in the 60s and 70s that tried to create it to add to their arsenals and were never able to do so. This group of, and most of the members of Aum were pretty young. They're like under the age of 22. So they'd be like the equivalent of Gen Z now. You know, they were able to figure out how to do it over the course of just a year or so. And even though it was never perfectly made, it was still deadly enough to do a ton of damage. And outside of just the dozen or so people who sadly passed in that incident, like thousands of others had permanent nerve damage and neurological issues from it. So it's one of the most terrifying weapons out there.
Yes, and I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, Chiaki, this, they got it from the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union broke up. There were just weapons lying around, and how did they get their hands on it?
Yeah, so I mean, if you're talking about the weapons, yeah, they Soviet Union collapsed. They went into Soviet Union and got hands of a lot of weapons. But if you're talking about sarin gas, they actually like went online and like found a recipe of a gas on the internet, and you know, back then, and but they got chemicals from Russia and you know other parts of the world, and they were just
Germany in some cases. Yeah. A lot of the chemicals needed to create sarin are available, you know, for agricultural buyers, and they would create shell companies to purchase the chemicals they would need from around the world. And apparently there's no exact definitive answer to the source, but the claim is that they basically found it on internet. Like there's just information on the internet back then that you could find on how to synthesize it.
Wow, the internet was brand new too. That's scary. Well, let me ask you this, Ben, because I remember the heavyset fellow with the beard, the Shoko Asahara, and that wasn't even his real name. I'm always, and I think for all human history of humanity, and it doesn't matter what culture or what country, we always wonder how people can buy in to these doomsday cults. What was it about Shoko Asahara and the Aum Shinrikyo?
I think what plays a kind of outsized role in the appeal of Ohm has a lot to do with the period that it was born within, which is the early 1980s, mid 1980s. This period is now looked back at as the bubble era. I think for Asahara, like what he identified was that there was a kind of, you know, hole in the culture at the time that just he filled. There was a lot of emptiness, a lot of like unsatisfaction with the idea that, you know, the first and most important goal in life at that time was financially driven, or, you know, like asset driven, like buying a Lamborghini or a condo in Tokyo. It's like just essentially something he looked at this moment and became kind of a voice that, you know, it was almost like a father figure to people who felt very much lost in that cultural environment. Had his message, would his message have worked in another time or place? It's really hard to say, but I think he really just knew how to capitalize on the culture of that very specific period. And that had a lot to do with his appeal. And I think it also had to do with his circumstance growing up, like the way he saw it. He was a product of the devastation of the post-war era in Japan. And I think it's been described to us, and Chiaki can speak to this, but like the culture was very much one where like there was a lot of anger at the older generation. He became sort of an alternative voice for a lot of young people who felt a lot of anger at the earlier generation for their circumstances. And he filled that role.
Yeah, anger and also like the emptiness is, you know, as Ben said earlier, is a great point. I think, you know, there was Japan as a whole is not a very religious culture, and a lot of people don't have a specific, you know, culture like Christianity or Buddhism. And I think Asahara was very much a leader, a figure that a lot of young people kind of needed to follow. And, you know, of course, that sort of mentality works in a positive way many times, but, you know, in this case, it just worked very lethal, negative way.
Last question for you, Chiaki. I remember this guy and a bunch of them, they were on the equivalent of death row for decades. And I guess, I don't know, it was about 5 years ago, they finally were all hanged, which I think most people around the world would say they had it coming to them. But what about that process of all the appeals and more than 20 years of waiting for the sentence to be carried out?
I think, it took a little bit to get sentenced, but I think that they were sentenced a while ago. They were just on death row for a while. Mm-hmm. And Japan execution is not super common. And when there was a specific sort of transition of the era 7-8 years ago, and basically the Japanese government didn't want to carry the execution into the new era. So they committed execution for 13 people.
Yeah, so if you heard the words, the terms like Heisei era, yeah, or Showa era, that whatever era that,
yes,
that period was the...
Yeah, it was a transition from Heisei to Reiwa. And before the Heisei period ended, the government or the police or the government conducted execution. But they were on the death row for a while.
They were basically like, we don't want this thing lingering into our new era, so we're mm-hmm. going to wrap up this loose end that took place in the Heisei era so it doesn't carry over into the Reiwa era.
And I guess also you run the risk of making a martyr out of the guy. Didn't somebody drive a car into a bunch of people to like protest it or something? And
yeah, what that person's exact motivations were has never been super clear. I think he wasn't really ever affiliated with... There are several successor groups to Ohm, and the character in our film you see is part of one of them. I think that person was never actually linked to one of those groups, but he did sort of pledge some type of allegiance to Asahara.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was never really clear. And, you know, as is the case for a lot of people who do, you know, terrorist attack, like civilians who do terrorist attack, it was never clear. But it was a huge controversy when the execution happened, and certainly a huge sort of news. And it happened kind of out of nowhere. We didn't really expect it to happen. And one day, it was on the news that, 30 people were executed. So it kind of happened all of a sudden.
Well, this is going to be a big movie. It already has been at Sundance. They only take the best there. It's called OM, AUM, The Cult at the End of the World, releasing in theaters today and everywhere you can rent movies on March 28th from Greenwich Entertainment. We've been speaking to the co-directors, Ben Braun and Chiaki Yanagimoto. Congratulations on the film. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.